This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download podcast. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, with World Earth Day upon us, we look at a gauge of whether or not we're on the right path to meeting the Paris Agreement goal of 2 degrees global warming. And as an investor, why should you care? Well, we look back at a previous crisis, look at the companies and some of the industries involved in climate crisis solutions to see how they've evolved since. And finally, where do we go from here? And as an investor, what could and what possibly should we be doing about it? If you're listening on April 22nd, it's Happy Earth Day, which feels strange given the times we're currently living in. But we've got two newcomers to the show today to help navigate the tricky waters of climate change, COVID-19, and what it means for investors. First up is Isabella Harvey-Bather. She's co-portfolio manager of a climate change fund. Isabella, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, David.
And Andrew Howard, head of sustainable research. How are you doing?
Very well, as can be hoped. Thanks, David.
Okay, in the intro, we mentioned the Paris Agreement and a goal of keeping global warming below 2 degrees. Before we get on to a gauge of how far along the path we are to meeting that target, first of all, Andrew Howard, can you give us a bit of a background as to what the Paris Agreement is and why 2 degrees as a target?
Well, so the Paris Accord was an agreement that was signed in December 2015, by global leaders around the world, virtually all of them at the time committed to effectively limiting long-run temperatures increases to around 2 degrees over pre-industrial levels. So to try and put that a little bit in context, pre-industrial levels is basically the late 1800s. And what effectively the commitment implied was that we would take action collectively, the world's governments, the world's populations would take action to limit the increase in temperatures over the long term to around 2 degrees relative to that level. So far, temperatures have already risen by just over 1 degree relative to those same pre-industrial levels. So we're just over halfway there in terms of that kind of overall target. It's worth saying as well that the target was for well below 2 degrees with an intention to aim for 1.5 degrees. Which is obviously a more ambitious target when you put things in that context. But it was really a defining moment in many ways in terms of climate policy, of really bringing together the world's major leaders from most countries around the world, virtually all countries around the world, to committing to a line in the sand that says, this is the temperature rises, this is the action that we will take, this is the outcome that we intend to be able to live with. And it really was a sort of coordinating moment or a moment of coordination in that kind of long-run winding story of climate policy, which for 20 odd years has kind of moved forward and backward and forward and backward, and we've had false dawns and steps forward. But that was really a moment where we got to a point of, this is what the world's governments have committed to achieving. It then moves on to, well, what are we actually going to do to deliver that? And that's really been the time since Paris, and this is where it becomes quite interesting, I think, because the intention was that the 5-year anniversary after the Paris Agreement was one where governments around the world would come back with revised plans themselves, so that the national plans that different countries had in place would line up with that global commitment that countries have made. Now, obviously, the Conference of Parties this year, the sort of annual conference organised by the UN, has been postponed. It was going to be held in Glasgow, and we saw the announcement on that a couple of weeks ago. But I do think that the broader policy initiative is still moving forward.
It's obviously great that lots of countries have committed to trying to reach a target of 2 degrees, but where are we on the path to meeting that target? Well, Schroders has created a climate progress dashboard. It's supposed to give an indication of where we are along that journey. So, deep breath, everyone. Andrew Howard, what does the Climate Progress Dashboard tell us now?
Well, I mean, the very short answer is it's telling us there's an awful lot more to do. So by way of a brief background as a recap, so the dashboard, the Climate Progress Dashboard, is something that we created a couple of years ago as a way of really trying to provide an objective measure of how far and how quickly all of the different things that will need to change to get us to 2 degrees are actually changing. So it looks at political efforts, at business strategies, at technology change, at fossil fuel production, and says how quickly will we need to see a change in that particular measure? How many more electric cars will need to be on the road? How many more, much more renewable energy will need to be generated? How much, how quickly will oil, gas or coal production need to drop in order to get us to a 2 degree world? And how quickly are those things actually changing? And when we compare what we're actually seeing with what we will need to see, it's fairly clear that there's a big gap still ahead. So looking at the things that are currently happening in terms of electric car sales, in terms of renewable energy use, would imply that we're heading for something around about a 3.9 degree long run temperature rise, rather than the 2 degree rise that we need to see under the commitments made in Paris or lower. So there really is quite a long way to go. It's telling us, I think, that there's a lot more disruption ahead if we're going to meet those commitments. And it's telling us really that we've begun a journey, but that there are a lot more steps on that journey still to take.
Okay, so obviously there's some things we may be closer to be hitting the target and other things that we're probably not. Which ones are closer to hitting the target?
Well, so I think if you look at it across the board, you look at things like, for example, electric car use, or you look at renewable energy use, there's a bit more momentum, there's a more positive picture among some of those areas. I think in terms of political action, in terms of social will, they've been relatively stable for some time. We are beginning to see some signs of improvement in those indicators as well. But some of the other areas that we look at, things like carbon capture and storage that have long been held out by a lot of the industry as part of the solution or a major part of the solution to the climate challenge, are really moving very slowly and at this point seem to be really not generating anywhere near enough scale to have an impact on the climate challenge. So it really is a case of looking at this sort of mosaic of there are some areas moving more quickly, particularly around kind of new emerging technology areas. There are some areas that are beginning to move around, particularly around policy, particularly around kind of business strategies. And there are some areas that are really not moving very quickly at all, for example, around carbon capture and storage. And it's about putting all of that together and saying, when you look at it in the round, what does that tell us? And say that the challenge presently is that's telling us, say, that if we're heading for about a 3.9 degree long run temperature rise, that there's an awful lot more work to be done.
We're in the middle of a pandemic. Businesses are shut down, people are traveling less. What impact, if any, has COVID-19 had on this progress towards this 2 degree global warming?
Well, I mean, clearly the lockdown that we've had from pretty much most major countries around the world has had a pretty significant impact on industrial activity, on economic output, and also on carbon emissions. So it looks extremely likely that 2020 will see carbon emissions decline relative to last year. To try and put that a little bit in context, there've only been this would be the fourth year in three decades in which carbon emissions actually fall on a global basis. So there's a very clear immediate impact in terms of the effect on global carbon emissions, and clearly that's beneficial. Having said that, when we look at past crises, when emissions have dropped during a crisis, that has often been temporary. There's often been a recovery and a bounce back in the following year. So when we think about the long-term trajectory, when we think about what we're looking at through the Climate Progress Dashboard, a lot still remains to be seen in terms of how many of the changes that we're seeing at the moment, how much of the sort of changing behavior actually sticks and remains in place after the crisis. So looking at the dashboard specifically, which we've updated, obviously, for the latest data over the last quarter, the overall effect has been relatively muted. On the one hand, carbon prices have fallen very sharply as economies have slowed, and lower carbon prices imply a higher long-run temperature rise. On the other hand, capital investment, CapEx, in the fossil fuel sectors has dropped fairly quickly as well, and that implies lower long-run temperature rises. The net effect of those things is more or less to offset each other. The headline temperature rise implied when we look at the whole dashboard is pointing to a 3.9 degree temperature rise over the long term. That's the same as it was last quarter. So the immediate effects, yes, there are significant impacts on the economy. Yes, there are significant impacts on emissions. But the real question is, as we look forward, as we try and get a sense of where are we heading over the long term, is how many of those things change? We've all got used to remote working and cutting out travel. Does that behavior all change stick after the lockdown starts to ease? We've historically built up long and complex supply chains in many global industries, and the transport that they require is clearly carbon intensive, as well as in many cases those supply chain themselves. Do we see those become simpler? Do we see those become shorter? Do we see companies focus more on sourcing more from more local areas? Consumers have moved online. Do we see that stick as well after the lockdown eases? So there's a lot of questions, I think, in terms of what changes after the lockdown eases and how many of the behavioral changes that we're seeing pushing emissions down today remain in place after the lockdown is lifted. So the immediate effects have been, if you like, significant, but are potentially temporary. The real question will be, can we really begin to see at a policy level, at a company level, and at an individual level, changes in behavior that allow some of those benefits to remain in place after the lockdown lifted?
Okay, thanks for that, Andrew. And in the next part of the show, we'll be looking at why investors should care about it. And in particular, we're looking at previous crises and what that might be able to tell us about this one.
Isabella Harvey-Bathurst is an investor in climate change themes. We've heard about the limited long-term effects so far of the COVID-19 crisis on climate change, according to the Schroders Climate Progress Dashboard. So what can we learn from previous crises?
I think it's a really interesting question. I think it is instructive to look back at how clean technology fared during and after the global financial crisis. As a disclaimer, I think it's definitely not a perfect tool to try to gauge how a set of industries might emerge from a crisis. But when we looked at this, what was striking is just how much has changed for clean technologies and for climate policy since 2008. So what I don't want to do is sort of downplay how disruptive the coronavirus crisis may well be, but what seems clear to us is that some of the crucial trends for climate change investors are on a much firmer footing now than they were back in 2008. So if I just give you a couple of examples, if we look at electric vehicles, for example, back in 2008, there were just two electric vehicle models on the market in Europe, and the top-selling EV sold about 330 units. Now, if we fast forward to 2020, there are now 70 EV models on the market in Europe, and the best-selling EV in the world sold more than 300,000 units last year. It was a Tesla Model 3, by the way. And it's clear that these products now have a mass market appeal. And what was definitely a niche industry back at the time of the last crisis has now gone mainstream. I think another area that's important to highlight is renewable energy. It's an area that's seen a massive change since 2008 as well. So back in 2008, renewables were highly dependent on subsidies, and this left them at risk when government finances became very stretched. After the crisis, they were at risk of having those subsidies withdrawn, and we saw that happen in a number of geographies. But since the last crisis, costs have fallen dramatically. And at the start of 2020, renewables have become the cheapest form of new energy generation in 2/3 of the world. So renewable energy is now largely cost competitive. So that's a really stark difference from at the time of the last crisis. And then just finally, I think it's also important to highlight how political and corporate will has evolved versus the last crisis. So since the last crisis, climate commitments have become much more firmly established in policy planning and corporate strategies. And we've seen, through the Paris Agreement,
global leaders have made a collective commitment to limit global temperature increases to below 2 degrees. Whether or not we're on track for that is another question, as Andy was discussing earlier. What we've also seen is corporates, companies like Schroders, increasingly aligning themselves with this 2-degree transition. So increasingly committing to becoming net zero by a particular date, for example, and then working that into their own corporate strategies. So in terms of the kind of outlook, we think we're in a much better place as far as several of the key kind of climate trends that investors look at are concerned.
What effect, if any, is the COVID-19 crisis having on corporate policy?
I think it's a great question because right now, I think it's clear that the most immediate challenge is dealing with the coronavirus crisis. But a lot of people in our industry are asking, well, what does the world look like afterwards? Are there some lasting changes in, you know, how companies behave and how people behave? And one of the examples we've been thinking about is the fact that the coronavirus crisis has forced many businesses to move to remote working, and many business meetings and conferences have been switched to virtual ones. And we think that these dramatic behavioral changes could well lead to a reevaluation of the necessity of many of these face-to-face meetings. And you combine that with the fact that this current crisis has come at a time when more and more businesses have already committed to reducing their carbon footprints, as I was mentioning earlier. And the fact of the matter is, for many services businesses, business travel-related emissions are the largest source of their carbon footprint. So given what we know about the airline industry and the fact that it is some way off finding a low carbon solution, the choice for a lot of businesses is, do they buy carbon offsets or do they just travel less in order to meet these targets that they've self-imposed? So when you combine that sector ambition, that corporate sector ambition to reduce emissions, and you combine it with the fact that the response to this crisis has forced many businesses to scale up remote working, we think it's quite possible that we could see some more permanent changes in how we work, and that that could be good for the climate.
And as I suppose, as investors, we're all looking around for the companies that are adapting, and those with those solid balance sheets that will help them through the current crisis that we're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, for now, there's definitely an emphasis on understanding the short-term disruptions, understanding how supply chains get disrupted, and how demand gets disrupted as well, because this is both a supply and a demand shock. But as we move through the crisis, we're also interested in, you know, these trends that we've been talking about and how robust they are, and the fact that we expect them to more or less resume once the crisis is over in terms of those key climate change trends.
Great. And in the next part of the show, we'll be looking at where we go from here and what could or should investors be doing about it.
So we've heard about the commitments from countries and companies to meeting a target of 2 degrees global warming. We've heard about the evolution demand for those businesses helping meet that target. But according to the Climate Progress Dashboard, we're still a way off. Andrew Howard, COVID-19 feels like a turning point, certainly in the long term. But could it be?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. This really is a turning point. And I think, look, if you think about this in the context of all the discussions around climate change that have happened over the last few years, one thing that was clear before COVID-19 kind of hit us was that the next decade, the 2020s era, would be a defining point in the climate question, the climate challenge. This was either the decade in which we see a real concerted shift to start cutting emissions, to start decoupling in a much more stringent way economic growth and development from carbon emissions. And really this crisis coming as it does right at the beginning of that decade, I think really does mark a turning point. On the one hand, this could be the crisis in which we see the stimulus that the governments are talking about, in which we see the response to that crisis really being aligned with the green climate commitments that governments around the world have made. And we've seen comments, for example, from the European Union around making sure that fiscal stimulus plans are aligned to the commitments that they've made under the Green New Deal and under long-term climate commitments to decarbonise the European economy. And we've seen those commitments starting to come through. And I think it will be really interesting to see, do we see governments in the way that they respond to this, respond in a way that is aligned to accelerating some of those climate ambitions? Or do we see things just simply focusing on a much more shorter term picture? Do we see companies responding similarly by using this opportunity in the ways that Isabella's talked about before, of really thinking about business practices, the way that we run our organisations, the amount of travel that we do, and how we organise ourselves in a way that's aligned to where we know we need to get to if we're going to meet, say, long-term climate commitments across the world. So I do think this is a turning point, and I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful that there are many of the challenges that we're currently going through have a silver lining, in the sense that these could be part of a springboard towards addressing those long-term challenges. And again, the risk of being bleak, that if we don't do that, I think it creates more headaches, in the sense that if we see significant amounts of fiscal spending, and if you look at the amount of money that governments around the world have committed to providing to support economies as a result of the coronavirus, it's already significantly more than was provided after the global financial crisis a decade ago. So there's an awful lot of money being spent. There's an awful lot of funds being made available. And if they're not aligned to those long-term climate goals, it'll make it harder in many ways for governments to be able to provide support, fiscal support at least, in the future. So we are at a real fulcrum. I think the signs in many ways are actually relatively positive, in the sense that we are seeing this part of the political agenda. We are seeing climate change remain a focus of politicians, of companies, and of society and media more generally. And climate change is part of that discussion in a way that perhaps it wasn't. Certainly wasn't 10 years ago, and hasn't been in previous crises that we've been through over the last few years.
And what's the shareholders' responsibility in all this?
Well, I think this is, from my point of view, one of those times where the role of engagement, the role of us as active, responsible investors engaging with the companies that we are invested in, one, to help encourage them and ensure that they're thinking responsibly about how they maintain the resilience of their business, how they use the crisis in a way to ensure that their company remains strong, that they come out of the other side of this stronger. But yes, there are undoubtedly short-term challenges to deal with, and they're going to be very acute in many industries. But actually also thinking about the kind of longer term planning and what companies will need to do in order to respond to that is a key role that we as investors can play in our discussions with companies, in the way that we engage with companies. And I think, you know, in much the same way that we as an organization, as you mentioned earlier, have made a number of commitments about what we're doing in response to the crisis, I think we're having similar conversations with a lot of other companies about what we would expect and like them to be doing to respond to the crisis as it is immediately, but also how they think about how they their longer term strategies in terms of how they make sure they come out the other side of this as stronger businesses.
And finally, Isabella, as an investor in climate change, are you optimistic?
Well, I think, yes, I am. And I think I'd echo Andy's comments there. What we've seen, particularly in Europe, is a continued momentum behind the idea of the Green Deal, and the fact that the Green Deal should remain an important policy tool through the crisis, and possibly even a framework for future stimulus. I think last week the European Commission president came out and reiterated her support for this policy, and we've seen various kind of industry groups coming together to really try to push the idea that the climate plan should not be derailed by the current crisis. So those are the things that really encourage me, combined with what I was saying earlier about the fact that so many of the important trends that we look at are just on a much firmer footing than they were 10 years ago.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Andrew and Isabella. Thank you very much for joining us today.
And And that was the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out anything more about what we've spoken about on the show, go to schroders.com/theinvestordownload. And don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can also rate and review us there as well. And above all, keep safe and keep well.